choir chimes are being collected, just a note for our prayer for illumination. We'll be singing it, and I want you to note it's verses 1, 4, and 1. All right. So let us ask God to come be with us, shall we?
I don't think any of you will have a hard time finding the first reference this morning in our Bible, Genesis 1, verses 1 through 5. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. Then God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw that the light was good. And God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, the first day. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God.
Our second lesson comes to us from Paul's letter to the Romans, the 8th chapter, beginning in the 18th verse. Paul writes, "I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory about to be revealed to us. For the creation waits with eager longing for the revealing of the children of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not of its own will, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that creation itself will be set free from its bondage to decay and will obtain the freedom of the glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning in labor pains until now. And not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly while we wait for adoption and the redemption of our bodies. For in hope we were saved. Now hope that is seen is not hope, for who hopes for what is seen? But if we hope for what we do not see, We wait for it with patience. This is the word of the Lord. In the beginning, these are profound and powerful words, for they are words of origin. To say, in the beginning when God, means we agree with a very specific starting point of belief. We are setting down stakes on how we view and approach all that we see before us. To say, in the beginning, is to give consent to the idea that there was a beginning. There was a definite start to something. We do not say as it has always been or as it has been passed down. No, we say in the beginning. To say in the beginning when implies that the beginning was purposeful and deliberate. And the word when anchors that beginning in time. To say in the beginning when God asserts that there is God, that there is other or another who is not us. Not everyone in our diverse American culture would join us in these words. So when we say them, we are carving out for ourselves a territory of perspective under which we choose to operate. This is no small thing. We affirm God, powerful, majestic, and mighty, in a deliberate act, began something. And we call that something creation. What the origin stories of Genesis, and yes, there are two origin stories in Genesis, what these stories share in poetic and artistic language is the beginning, our understanding, our perspective of the beginning of how everything that is tangible around us came to be. The entire natural world and the setting in which it sits were created for a purpose. And all of that had to be set in place before the crowning achievement could finish God's work. Saving the most cherished for last. Hear that. The most cherished for last. God created beings with the capacity to respond with the same love that God had inside God's own self. Man and woman, the crowns of creation, were set over everything else to tend and keep what God had put in place. God's original design allowed humans to flourish in relation to nature, that is, that which would sustain them, and to flower in relation to God, who would love and nurture them. And as we know, that original design did not work out so well, not due to any fault on God's part, mind you, but, and we profess and believe, because humanity desired to outgrow God's design. Humanity wanted more. We still do. God honored humanity's poor choices And because of who God is, God also had to follow through with allowing humanity to bear the consequences of those poor choices. Yet ever the creative one, God was not willing to allow an altered design to become the final outcome. God set a new plan in motion. God began to work on another design, one of God's own making, and we give homage to that design every year at the start of Advent. For it is on that first Sunday of what is the end of humanity's design calendar. I always found that interesting as a child. The church year starts in December. It did not make a whole lot of sense. What we call the end, the church calls the beginning. And through that season, we prepare our hearts to receive the most unexpected design that God finally chose. For you see, God chose to be active, which I guess shouldn't surprise us because God acted in creation. God chose not only to be active, God chose to be interactive. God chose to come down to earth into God's own creation. This is the God who lit the stars, set planets in motion, separated light from dark, day from night, earth from sky, waters from land, and populated everything with such a wide and wild and wonderfully intricate web of interdependent species. We are still trying to learn how it all works. It outstrips our capacity to comprehend it. This God looked over everything, and God loved it. So when humanity chose to plunge itself back into darkness, God chose to make a new beginning. God chose to come as human. Who would have thought of that? And God chose, once again, to start at the beginning. So he entered the human experience as a baby. His mother and his earthly father named him Jesus, as it had been given them to do. Humanity had toiled under the burden of disobedience for generations, and the arrival of God's own Son, well, that was going to rework everything. For in the Son, the new design would be revealed. However, we forget it was not just humanity that waited for the coming of that new design. When humanity disobeyed God, they were not the only ones who bore the consequences. The whole of creation was cursed and would no longer produce anything without the effort of men and women and children. And humanity and nature have been locked in a contentious existence ever since, marked by wild swings between abusive subjugation and life-affirming stewardship. Humanity's effect on its environment is well documented, with more data being brought forward what seems like every single day. Out in the Pacific Ocean, there is this great garbage patch that floats around full of marine debris that is over tens of thousands of square miles. And they're trying to figure out what to do with that. Deforestation is occurring at an alarming rate in the southern hemisphere because they're working hard to catch up with us. And land is being cleared for grazing. Species of marine life are endangered from overfishing of populations or pollution of habitat. Stewardship of all of this challenges us. And the stakes are high, my friends, because no nature, no us. Hard lessons have been learned and have forged public policies to help humanity achieve a more sustainable balance within our environment, both in the profit and nonprofit sector. And sometimes doing more may actually mean doing less. In Grand Rapids, a dream has stirred to bring the rapids back to Grand Rapids. That is, to remove several dams across the Grand River and return the riverbed to the state it was in before the modifications made by the arrival of European settlers. In a West Michigan Business article posted May 2nd of this year on MLive, author Jim Harger writes about an organization known as Grand Rapids Whitewater. They are in the process of seeking the proper permits and raising the estimated $45 million to remove bridges and return rock and substrate to the riverbed. However, what has been learned after so many efforts is that you tug on one part of nature's web and vibrations are felt in another place. The article goes on to note there are two projects that must be completed before this main project can even begin. First, the breeding grounds of the snuffbox mussel, an endangered species, must be relocated. And the second is the current 6th Street Dam acts as an unintended barrier to prevent the invasive species of the sea lamprey from spawning farther upstream. An effective alternative to the dam must be found before it can be removed. This is but one example of the complex challenges we face, yet as Christians face them, we must. Our denomination, the PCUSA, has developed an entire mission outreach dedicated to environmental stewardship. And if you are interested in that, I invite you to go online because the resources are vast. But this is an outgrowth of recognizing that as Christians, we are called to be stewards. We are called to be part of working in God's design. We are also called and allowed to be appreciators. All of those of you who have been out camping in nature in these last couple weeks or during the summer understand that connection, that nature refreshes us, that it is special, that we are part of it. It's important that we appreciate. Nature is fragile. It is also resilient. By God's design, the seasons come and go on a regular basis. Planting and harvesting happen in due course. Rain cleans the air, feeds the fields, feeds the rivers, rushes to the seeds, evaporates into the clouds, and repeats in a continual cycle. God has made creation glorious, and we give glory back to God with thankfulness, praise, and responsible stewardship of the gifts of the earth. In this season, when the light occupies more hours than the dark, nature can serve as a reminder that our God can and does do marvelous things. And the most marvelous is that God designed to enter the darkness of our disobedience and to bring the light. The beloved Son has come, and not only do we benefit, but so will all of creation. So let us walk in the light and live glad and grateful and humble and responsibly in the bounty of God's goodness, in all that God has provided for us. As God has been gracious and generous, so let us be. Amen and amen.